Spring turkey season is upon us, and don't be caught out in the woods without having Onyx Hunt on your phone. One feature Onyx has that is often overlooked for turkey hunting is their recent imagery filter with their elite memberships. This imagery is updated week to week, and it comes in extremely handy, especially when you're trying to find these gobble zones where these turkeys will go out in a high spot on a fresh clear cut and strut around all day long. Actually, I was just looking at it on Onyx where the timber company just came into Andrew's Club and did a very small clear cut along this creek. And I can see the high spots on the topographical map, but also I can see exactly where they mulch. And those are going to be hot spots for finding gobblers, especially mid-morning after they get off their hens, getting up on these little high spots in this fresh, small clear cut along the creek and strutting and gobbling all day long. If you want to give Onyx a try, you can actually download it for free, try it for 7 days. And if you decide to purchase, you can use the promo code Southern and save on your premium and elite memberships. So going into this turkey season, know where you stand with Onyx.
Look, y'all know we harp on it a lot. You need a good pair of binos. Yeah, I never hunted with binos until I was almost into my 20s. I never did it when I was a teenager or anything like that, or when I was a kid, we never had binos. And when I bought my first pair of Vortex binos, the first binos I ever purchased back in like 2015, it immediately made a huge difference for me, especially in the turkey woods. So give yourself the advantage of a good pair of binos this spring, whether you're looking for more of like an entry-level bino like the Vortex Diamondbacks or something really, really nice like the Razors. Vortex is going to have something for you. And hey, don't pay full price for it. Use our discount code at eurooptic.com. Use the code SGN10 to get a discount on any Vortex optics that you want to order. Again, that's eurooptic.com, code SGN10 to go get a discount on any Vortex product you order. If you live in the Gulf Coast region, you need to find yourself at the EcoWild Expo May 10th through the 12th in Mobile. It is the premier outdoor expo for the Gulf Coast region, and we're going to be there. We're going to have a booth. We're super excited about it. Can't wait to meet you guys that live down there. We absolutely love the Gulf Coast region, so to be a part of this show, we're super excited about. We're going to have past podcast guests there at our booth for you to talk to, guys who are relevant for your area, who you can talk to, you can pick their brain, you can joke with them, laugh with them, tell them your story, whatever you want to do. It's going to be an awesome time. We're already working on some past podcast guests, but hey, if you live in this area and you have a suggestion for someone you want to see at that show, write in and we'll see if we can get them. There's going to be all kinds of exhibitors at the show that are focused on hunting, fishing, conservation, and recreation. There's going to be activities for the whole family there. They got axe throwing, archery. They're going to have our podcast booth. And then for the kids, they got touch tanks, a honeybee exhibition, a raptor show, kids fishing tank, BB gun range, and a butterfly house. So you're going to love it. Your kids are going to love it. It's going to be an awesome time. So head on over to ecowildexpo.com to get more information on the show and to go ahead and grab your tickets. And hey, mark it on your calendar. May 10th through the 12th. Be there. We want to see you and we're excited to talk to you. So we'll see you at the EcoWild Expo this May 10th through the 12th at the Mobile Convention Center in Mobile, Alabama. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. Sitting here with Jacob Myers in person, live and in person. Jacob, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. Oh, not as good as you because we just got done doing a little fishing. Nothing too intense, but I got skunked and Andrew caught him a little bass.
That's right. So I'm now the resident fishing expert.
You'll hear him on the next Southern Waters episode.
Yeah, I'll be telling y'all about how I caught a freaking 11-inch spotted bass.
If that.
Yeah. He's a little bitty one. Hey, more fish than you caught, bro.
I know. I was actually surprised you threw it back because, you know, typically you're like, you know, we
releasing them into the grease.
Yeah. You know, release them to Lake Crisco.
Yeah.
Whatever you normally say.
Yeah.
But not today. We just got done doing some scouting for some turkeys. But on this episode, we're talking a little bit more about some deer, which I'm kind of excited about.
Yep.
Yeah. Listen, turkeys, I love turkeys, but man, dude. The deer hunting, it's still so much in my brain, especially now because it's like March still, and bucks are still holding antlers.
Yeah, so we got some cameras out on my club next to the house. That's where we just went scouting at. And you say we were scouting for turkeys, but, dude, I'm scouting for deer too, man. When I'm in the woods, I'm just scouting. I'm just looking around at everything I got. Did you see that nice scrape in the bottom when we came out?
Yeah, I'm glad. I was surprised you didn't say anything about it. I filmed a little bit of it.
Yeah.
Going, and that drain comes right out to that food plot, probably about 200 yards away, 250 yards away.
That's just another one that, you know, next year, as long as I'm still in that club, I'll probably throw a camera on it. Mm-hmm. Or just throw a little Tasco on that joker, leave it there all year, just see what happens. I don't expect to get anything groundbreaking on it, but, You never know. You never know. This episode, this is actually one that we've gotten requested quite a bit over the years. We talk a lot about, obviously, trying to hunt big mature bucks or just bucks in general. And that's pretty much what we talk about every single week. But we actually get a surprising number of people who reach out wanting to just do an episode on just like killing deer or like, you know, filling the freezer, going out and killing some does, just general topics like that. Like, hey, man, like I'd love to kill a mature buck just like the next guy. And I kind of fall into this category, too, a lot of times. I want to kill a buck as much as the next guy, big mature buck. But honestly, when it comes down to it, if I go out and I kill a doe, I'm happy. So how do you kind of, you know, hone in on just good deer movement and go out and have a good hunt? And this could be somebody who's just trying to get their first deer, someone who's just trying to kill more deer, or someone who's maybe trying to help their kid or somebody else get their first deer, and you're just really wanting numbers. So we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, today. And I think to kick us off, one thing I want to bring up is, do you have any memorable doe stories, doe hunting stories?
Because
I've got a handful. I've got a good many. That I think is kind of interesting, but I mean, hit me
tactics with it. Wise or just like weird
no,
stuff?
No, just
that
like
happened.
I mean, just like memorable hunts where you killed a doe. That was like, okay, there's something kind of special about like whatever the moment was.
Oh, yeah, dude, my first doe ever, or not my first doe ever, my first archery kill ever was a doe, and it was, I think it was in like 2014. It was when in Alabama and central Alabama specifically, we were having a really, really bad drought, and the drought was so bad that a lot of creeks that like run all year. We're going dry. Like the creek stopped running. The river almost stopped flowing. The river there in town, and because it was so dry, I'm like, man, I bet we could key in on some like water holes and stuff, and in these creeks and actually kill a deer. I mean, it was that dry. It never gets that dry in Alabama, and so I went to walking creeks in like September before season opened up, and you'd find in the creek where there'd be like a real hard bend in those creeks. And where there'd be a cut bank, and down there in that hole, there'd be like a little watering hole. And it looked like some kind of freaking like African watering hole that you see on TV where these guys are hunting over it. Like it was so beat down with tracks where just all the critters of the woods were going down there to get water. So I threw a camera on one, and I was getting bucks, does, turkeys, coyotes, squirrels, coons, like everything was hitting this one watering hole. And it was getting a lot of activity. And I don't know if it was opening day of bow season, but it was maybe like the second weekend of bow season or something. I went out there, and right at daybreak, I had two does come in right to that water hole. Ended up shooting one of them. That was my very first archery kill ever on public land. Well, it was that wasn't my first public land kill, but I killed my first archery deer on public land. So that was a pretty good one for me. That was fun. That was a good one.
And that was kind of earlier bow season?
Yeah, that was. That was going to be somewhere around October 20th-ish. Mm-hmm. So in Alabama, it always opens October 15th.
Depending on the zone.
But back then, it was all zones were October 15th, and we didn't have, like, it wasn't broke up into special zones yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that was probably October 20th or so. And there was also a lot of oaks dropping down there, which was that helped. I ended up hunting that spot a bunch and seeing a whole bunch of deer down there.
Hmm.
So what about you?
One that comes to mind, and it's not a tactic video, or you know, I guess story, but it's just an interesting story. I was probably 13 years old, 12 or 13, and I was hunting. I had only killed maybe one deer or two deer before that. And I was hunting with one of my uncles, not one of the ones that's been on the podcast, but we were down at the family farm, and there's this one food plot we always call the Rock Garden. And any longtime listeners probably heard me talk about this food plot, but it's this food plot down in this little bottom along this little creek that's got a glade that goes at the side of the ridge next to it. And we got down there, we're like, you know, going with the mindset, we're going to go kill a doe. Well, I was using my uncle was hunting with me, and he's not a big deer hunter. He's only killed probably one deer in the last 20 years. He just doesn't deer hunt a whole bunch. But he had this Marlin lever gun that was chambered in 44 Magnum. And this is a gun. Listen, this kind of tells you a little bit more about my uncle. He had this thing in his gun safe forever, and he's like, "Let's just go. Let's go down there and take the gun, take the 44." And I was like, "Okay, cool. That'd be cool to hunt with." And I don't think I ever asked, like, "Is the gun sighted or anything like that?" And we just went down there and sat down on the ground just off that little food plot. And that food plot's not very big. It's probably 60 yards long and probably 35 yards wide. And we were sitting at one corner of it up on some of those rocks. And some deer came out in the field. And actually, I had my little sister with us, too, and I forgot about this. We brought a shotgun with, like, a slug in it. And she was sitting next to me. We're all sitting on the ground, me, my uncle, my sister. And I had that 44, and a doe popped out. And she turned it like, it's like coming out in the field. I'm like, hey, I want to shoot. He's like, okay, you know, you're good, whatever. And Anthony said, you know, we can shoot whatever we wanted down there, you know, especially doe wise. And anyways, the dude comes out in the field, and it's like broadside. I'm like trying to get in the scope and everything, and it's got an old, you know, Tasco scope from probably like in the 80s. And it's a raised scope mount as well. So it's not, you know, flush down against the receiver of the action. It's raised where you can shoot iron sights as well. So it's kind of awkward, especially as a kid, to get on the scope because it's so high up, like off the cheek. Like you have to get your, pretty much remembering back at it when I had a, you know, shoulder of the gun, it felt like the cheek of the stock was like down on the bottom of my jaw instead of like up on my cheekbone because I was trying to look through that scope. Anyways, doe comes out, stops quartering away, probably 55 yards, pull the hammer back, shoot. Second I shoot, she drops. Just like falls, okay? And I held right behind her shoulder. And dude, I like, you know, typical Jacob. Like I'm same way now as I was back then. You shoot something, you know, I was kind of a little hoop and holler. And there's more deer in the field. And my uncle's like, he's like, shh. And I ran the other deer on the field. There's like a little buck out there too. He's like, you could have had your sister could have shot one. And I'm like, well, anyways. We go out there. And this is where it kind of gets kind of interesting. So we go out there, grab the deer, and we're looking at it, and I'm like, he's like, where'd you hit it at? I'm like, well, I put it right behind the shoulder, okay? And dropped her. And we're looking at it, and there's no hole, there's no blood, there's nothing. We're like looking at the deer, flipping it over and stuff, and there's nothing, okay? And we're like, oh, that's kind of weird. And he joked, he's like, well, you just scared her to death. So we start dragging her, and we're dragging her by, I guess, her front legs. And we're dragging her back to the ATV, and as we're dragging her head, at some point we're going over some rocks and it like spins around like 360, and I'm like, that's weird. And what? We looked at it and we're like, what the heck? Her neck was all spun up. And I look at her, and you could see there's a tiny hole probably 3 inches down from the bottom of her head down her spine. And I hit her right there. It didn't go all the way through. It just kind of broke the spine and broke her spine like pretty high up.
Oh, dang.
And I go back to the thing. I'm like, did I pull the shot or is the gun off? And that gun has not been shot since. So I don't know.
How many years ago was that?
14 almost.
Dang, man. I thought you were going to say she came alive on you.
No, that would have been weird. No, that would have been really weird.
I know guys who that's happened to before.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I know guys who killed a deer and they threw it in the back of the truck. And they were about halfway home, and it stood up in the bed of the truck. That's a whole nother story, though. Yeah. Anyways, so this whole subject, the doe hunting thing, this is something that, I mean, really not that long ago, like, I can really relate to this. Because, I mean, I try to go after mature bucks a little bit more now, but if I'm being honest, I mean, for most of the years that I've been hunting public land, which I think this is like year 9 of hunting public, like pretty much exclusively, I was just trying to get on deer, you know, and like I was just trying to go find a deer to shoot. And it's only in the last couple of years where I feel like I've actually been able to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, what is like your kind of journey been like with that, I guess, like trying to go from just, I guess, killing a deer to killing a mature buck? Or are you even there yet?
Let me say this. I feel like, and this is a great point to talk about on the podcast, like both of us had very good years this past season. I think we killed like a total of like 9 bucks between the two of us. And I think if I remember, 4, 5, 6 of the 9 were all mature bucks. The funny thing is, the times, and it was a handful of times last year, I'm like, I'm going out to kill a doe. I didn't even see a doe.
You went too far in the other direction.
No, well, it's like, it's so funny because, dude, there was a couple situations. Like I was taking my sister's fiance out, and I was trying to get him his first deer. He still hasn't killed his first deer. We were going on a piece of public land, and I'm like, dude, I feel pretty confident like where we're ending up. We went in a morning hunt, sat on, you know, what does Mr. Breeding call it? A right of way? Or just like a,
yeah, like
a
power line.
Yeah, no, you didn't have to say it, but yeah.
Gas
you know,
line,
yeah,
power line,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can see it for a long way. So I'm like, dude, there's normally always does out on this. Sat there morning, nothing. And I'm like, well, now we got to rethink for where we're going to sit in the afternoon. Went and sat another spot, very similar to it, with more dense cover actually in like the opening. And had an unbelievable hunt and actually got on some does, got on a really nice buck, the whole nine yards, but just didn't get any shot opportunities. But the time, again, there's a few times this year where it was like, say it's a doe hunt, a piece on a, you know, wildlife management area, and it's, you know, say gun hunting, and I go on a spot, and it's something about does. This is the thing I've realized, and it's different between public and private, but even, I mean, even maybe not so much, because especially like your hunting club, as the season progressed, it was hard to even find does out there where you like, oh yeah, we'll go see this food plot or go sit, you know, opening, that opening, and like, you're like, oh, there's going to be does come through, and like, none would show. Like, last day of season, I went in, we went into a spot, I'm like,
I saw a bunch of does.
Why'd you not shoot one?
Because I crossed the road before I could get my gun up. And it was like right, it was literally at legal shooting light, and I was trying to make sure that it was like at legal light.
Okay, I was thinking more so like the afternoon hunt.
Oh, gotcha.
But even that morning, too. I mean, we went on that hunt saying, because we hunt morning and evening, you know, we're going to go in and, you know, try to kill, you know, a couple does. Well, long story short, we didn't. We failed doing so. And it's one of those things that I think some people, and I'm guilty of this too, will like overthink, you know, trying to hunt does specifically. Say like maybe like early part of the season, like, oh, it's nothing, like you go find a doe. Then as like season progresses and pressure increases, it's like those deer kind of change, and it's like,
oh, big time.
Yeah, and especially like on a piece of public land where like, you know, you only have a few doe days maybe, or maybe you're on national forest and you have, you know, a little bit longer window to hunt for does. Specifically talking either rifle hunting or even with a bow, sometimes it can be more challenging than you think it is. And it kind of goes back to like, I don't know about you, but my mindset, every time I go in the woods, it's like, I got to go find a buck. I'm going to go find a buck. That's what we're looking for.
Yep.
And like, you know, maybe, you cross paths with some does, but like, that's not necessarily what I'm looking for. But like when that switch flips and you're like, oh, I'm trying to get some does, I'm still like in that buck mentality. And maybe like overcomplicating things more so than it needs to be. in a lot of circumstances.
And that's why you think you go out and you're not seeing any does when you're like, I'm going to go kill a doe. You're kind of overthinking it?
Overthinking it during certain parts of the season. And then when it gets to the later part of the season, it's just kind of laziness. Because unless you have a fairly unpressured piece of ground you have access to, whether it's public land, whether it's private land, doesn't matter. And like a hunting club really doesn't count, because a hunting club, I mean, you're getting so much pressure from so many other members. Like these does, if you're sitting on a food plot, they've been bumped off this food plot so much, especially there's been a decent amount of pressure out there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one of those things like you kind of like reanalyze what you're doing. So like what I'm trying to relate with the listeners is there are times for me when I'm like, I'm just trying to find a doe, especially kind of later in the season. I'm like, what am I doing wrong? Okay. Like legitimately, yeah. What am I doing wrong? Like, why can I not find a doe? And again, pressure just plays a huge, huge, huge part in that. And that's one of those things. It's like, you really got to figure out, like, you can't just go in based off deer sign. Like even feed sign, like can be kind of, especially late in the season, if there's been a lot of pressure and it's in a food source that, you know, more than likely deer been pressured off it, and not just a food plot, but even like feed trees or like, you know, you get a nice clear cut that's got a lot of browse in it. You know, if those deer have been bumped off that fresh clear cut a few times,
yep,
they may not be showing up during daylight.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the big does may not be coming out until like right at last light. So you really got to kind of change that perspective. But again, it's been something it's kind of funny. Again, I laughed about this year. I've told you about it. I think I might have mentioned on the podcast too. Just again, the few times when I went out, like I'm going to kill a doe, is when I'm like struggling to find a doe. I find some, maybe find some young bucks or whatever.
Yeah.
And this is the times.
That's when you go out and you see a spike.
Yeah.
Every time.
Spike or a little year and a half year old or 2.5 year old buck. And I'm like, well, that's not what I'm looking for. And just like, you know, the big does just, you know, evade me. And it's, again, that is like the interesting aspect about like this topic is, you know, being consistent or just learning to have success hunting does. And one of my biggest takeaways would be if your goal is to shoot a few does, you need it during the earlier part of season, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Unless you, again, going back, unless you have a property that has very little pressure that you can kind of go hunt later in the season, a lot of times later in the season, those deer just get wary, especially about food plots. If you have feeders on a property, that they can get wary about that as well, especially if there's been a lot of pressure, or even on public land as well. So, you know, one thing I've learned is like if you're going to go shoot a doe, especially in a state where maybe you have a pretty long season, you're better off trying to get it during bow season or the early part of firearm season or muzzler season and not wait until the last week to try to go find a doe. Because you may do it, but a lot of times the guys are killing, not this maybe as a general, like this is more general, but like it seems like a lot of people that are killing does late season are a lot of those yearling does. Mm-hmm. And like the big does aren't showing up. And I saw that like when I went to Weaver's and we were filming up there. If some of the deer that were brought in the very last week, like you had some bucks that were brought in, but it was a lot of, you know,
young does. 50
pound does.
Yeah.
Or they might have been spikes. I don't know. But like just really young deer, because those are the ones that are still going to be popping out in those food sources that people have been hunting all season long.
Yeah. That's something that we saw play out on my club this year, specific, like pretty dramatically, because the first couple hunts out there that I did, I was seeing a lot of does. So like the very first hunt I did out there, I saw either one or two does. It might have been the same doe. It might not have been. I'm not sure. But I shot that doe, and we tracked her and we found her. And that was right before gun season started. I shot her with my bow. And then gun season started, and there was a couple food plots where it's like every time I went past that food plot, there's a doe in it. Mm-hmm. And I took Mike in there, and he missed a doe. Mm-hmm. And shot right over her back. We had a group coming out, and dude, we were all over them, dude. Like they were. It was perfect. We saw like 11 does that day. He missed one. And I'm like, it's okay. We'll come back in here. And then we kept seeing him after that. I couldn't link up with Mike again, but I saw him like one or two more times after that. And eventually, probably 3 weeks into gun season, they just kind of quit showing up on that food plot. And they really quit showing up on like any food plot. And you know, we had some people asking about our hunting club and kind of how that ended up going. And one thing that I wanted to clarify about the hunting club is I didn't hunt it as much as I should have. I didn't really hunt it hard until kind of later in the season. But I'll say this. Almost every single time that I got off of a food plot and hunted off a food plot, I saw a deer. There were some times early in the season where I hunted a food plot and I saw some deer, specifically talking about does here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty reliable early in the season, but then they get shot off the food plots, they get scared off, and there's probably a lot of guys that, you know, are just, they'll have deer in the field and they'll get down out of the shooting house or whatever and scare the deer off, and that probably has a lot to do with it. But then as the season went on, as long as I got off of the food plots and I was in the woods on a terrain feature, I saw deer pretty much every time.
Yeah.
And I hunted those road crossings, and that's what it ended up being for us is switching like that last day we went in to hunt road crossings, and that morning you didn't see any, but I saw I think three or four does and a spike that morning on just a road crossing. And then I think Mike, it was either that morning or that afternoon, he went to his spot and we went and found like that food plot with the shooting house that looked good, and we're like, he can hunt here, but there was a road straight away going to it, and we're like, man, I don't know, he might should sit this road. And we decided to send him to the shooting house instead, and sure enough, when he was walking in, there was does hanging right there on the edge of the road at that straightaway. And had he just like snuck in there and sat there, he probably would have caught one of them crossing and mm-hmm. killed it, you know? And so, yeah, it definitely gets a lot harder as the season goes on, but I mean, they're still there for the taking if you kind of beat the bushes and get after them a little bit.
Well, that, and you got to think, you know, thick cover isn't just for, you know, big bucks. You know, those does are going to use it, and especially as that pressure increases on the properties, it's going to get all those deer are going to get tighter and tighter and tighter into that thick cover and be a lot more weary. And especially like on your club specifically, this is a great example. A lot of those guys at club really weren't trying to shoot a doe mm-mm. until like really late in the season. And yeah. a lot of these guys have been sitting food plots, have been sitting power lines. And it's kind of funny, but a lot of guys in your club like getting out during prime time. They don't want to sit until at legal light or even just after yeah. legal light before slipping out. And I guarantee they were bumping a ton of deer off those, you know, more destination food sources. And it just kind of changes that deer pattern. A lot of people don't realize that, but I mean, those deer get extremely educated. Those old does get extremely educated, just like a buck does. I mean, you got to think, you know, some of the does that might be running around your property might be 5, 6, even 7 years old or older. And those are the ones that the reason why they live, a couple reasons. Number one, people don't shoot them early. And then also, they just get educated on how hunters are accessing and using those areas, especially leaving. And they just become more and more wary in those areas, which kind of gets back down to if you're going to have success, especially kind of later in the season trying to kill, you know, does or even trying to kill a young buck, you know, young buck's a slightly different just because he may not have the overall experience that these older does have, and they may not be as wary. Mm-hmm. But those old does understand that pressure, understand where that pressure's at and where hunters are kind of sitting at. And a lot of times it's like you're catching them, like you're bumping deer just as you're getting to that spot you're bringing to sit, especially a food plot,
yeah,
power line. Like they're just off the edge of it. And I think that that plays a huge factor on, like, you know, how guys may or may not be seeing deer, especially later in the season. Like they're just not coming out to that specific spot until, you know, later after dark.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and when it comes to actually going to a place to like hunt and find and kill does, like what are you look for? I mean, because you have had success doing that. I mean, obviously over the years, like in Tennessee, you know, you had the infamous doe that you had to shoot like four times. There was that one. And then, I mean, several others as well. There was mm-hmm. the does that I filmed you shooting in Tennessee.
So the commonality, well, I just not to cut you off, but the commonality between all those was earlier in the season, every mm-hmm. single one of them, and they're all in V trees. Some being over persimmons, some being over white oaks and red oaks dropping. The last one on the backside of like a little field, a little cut cornfield, where there was water oaks and some white oaks dropping. And it's like, especially early season, especially if you like bow hunting, whether you're hunting with a crossbow or you're hunting with, you know, compound or traditional bow, whatever you're hunting with, it's like if you hunt feed sign or specifically early season, at least in the areas I've been in. Again, I haven't hunted a lot of the river bottom stuff that, you know, guys like Benji Vogt or Richard Fott or any other guys have really kind of like talked about where they're hunting feed trees throughout the whole season. But it seems like those spots where you can find those feed trees early in the year, you can be extremely consistent killing does.
Yeah.
And that takes more, not necessarily woodsmanship, but it takes more effort to go in and find those spots, because it's one of those things like you can't, I've never had success walking to an area in, say, August and like, oh, I'm going to come back and hunt this place first in November, or, you know, early season, bow season, and had success on those trees. It's like you find the feed sign as you're easing into a spot and setting it for like an afternoon spot specifically. Not necessarily in the morning. It's mostly in the afternoon where you're finding that feed sign. You're kind of setting up around it, making sure there's, you know, some thick cover, some bedding close by, and you're capitalizing on it. And that's where I've had the most, like, if I was going to kill a doe, I feel way more confident, unless it's like kind of earlier in gun season, during bow season to go out and do it and execute that during bow season specifically.
Yeah, so like you're saying, if you were going to shoot a doe on like January 20th here in Alabama with a rifle, or if you were going to shoot one on October 16th with a bow, you're going with October 16th?
I mean, more than likely, I feel like I'd have, you know, again, it depends on the spot and everything else, but I mean, I love hunting with a firearm. God, I love hunting with a gun. It's a great time. But it's also fun to hunt with a bow, but it just seems like those does, and the big bucks the same thing, but like I just haven't had the success on big deer that early in bow season. Had close encounters, just haven't executed on them. But it seems like the does specifically, if you just find deer sign, find feed sign around any kind of feed trees or creeks and water, and really not necessarily catching them coming to the water, but like working down the water's edge.
Oh yeah,
and like hunting around like small little streams and stuff, I've had success in those areas too. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of goes back to figuring out, like, going into this coming season, what are your goals? If your goal is like, hey, I really want to kill some, I want to kill my first year, I want to kill a doe, whatever, I would highly recommend, if you don't have a bow, get a bow. If you're gonna use a crossbow, that's fine. I don't care. It doesn't bother me one way or the other. But just go out there and literally have the mindset you're gonna walk in at like 11 o'clock. And you're going to scout your way all the way back into like a destination area that you kind of want to get to based off maybe topography or habitat, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you're going to kind of check feed sign as you're going. If you find something that's really hot, and again, the classic feed sign, Richard Fott talks about this, I think it's like episode like 119 or something like that, is again, it looks like the whole ground is all scratched and tilled up. Where you have a bunch of not only deer in there kicking around looking for acorns, if it's persimmon trees, you know, it's like super early. Like Alabama is pretty hard to hunt persimmon trees. I've never had success here just because of how early the persimmons are typically dropping versus when season comes in. But like in Tennessee, where you have like a late September opener, Arkansas, you've got like a late September opener,
Georgia,
that's early September, and you can find like those persimmon trees that are dropping that fruit. And it's like, if you find it, I'll say this, I have been to areas like in Arkansas where I saw 30 persimmon trees dropping, and there's feed sign all in there, mm-hmm. but it was in a little tiny, unless I was sitting like in the water, it was a little tiny dry point, and I say a point, it's 2 feet higher than the flooded swamp around it. If there was no way I felt like I could sit in there and execute shooting my bow in that spot mm-hmm. without like deer bust me. There was like to get up in a tree, you get 7, 8, 10 feet up a tree, completely skyline, no big trees around. They're all real small persimmon trees. And if you sit on the ground, it's completely bare. So I'm like, this is super tough. But if you find a persimmon tree, typically you're going to find a decent amount of feed sign around that persimmon tree, especially from coons and other just critters that are trying to get a hold of that fruit. And deer are typically pretty close or, you know, pretty close by. It's one of those things that if I find a persimmon tree dropping like that, I wouldn't typically be worried about sitting on it if I didn't see just an absolute ton of like droppings underneath the tree. But if I see tracks in the general area, more than likely that doe or those bucks or anything in that area is going to kind of come and at least scent check and see if there's any fruit on the ground.
Yeah.
And you could actually use that Jonathan Moreland tactic where he carries up a couple big rocks with him, like, you know, rocks the size, bigger than a quarter, puts them in his pocket. If he sees deer kind of walking out there 60, 70 yards, and he's like in front of a persimmon tree, starts dropping those suckers and let it hit that ground.
Sounds just like a persimmon hitting the ground.
Yeah, it sounds like a persimmon hitting the ground, and those deer kind of ease their way over, and you get a shot opportunity.
Yep. Another one that I've had pretty good luck with is just general transition areas. There was one place a couple years back in South Alabama, it's a big WMA down there, where there was like this big pine thicket. It was a big longleaf savanna. And there was really thick parts and then not so thick parts, but it was like real grassy, but like obvious bedding cover. And it was surrounded by hardwoods. And some of the hardwoods are up on hills and some of the hardwoods were like in a big giant creek bottom. And there's a fire break running all the way around it where they burned those longleafs. And I just hit that fire break and walked the fire break and went until I basically found like a big trail coming out of that pine thicket where they were coming out from the bedding. And I just hunted straight up trails because they were walking the fire break. But I would wait until I found like a big giant trail coming out of those pines. So you're kind of hunting where the trail comes out of the pines, but then there's also another trail on the fire break that kind of tees into it. And just straight up trail intersections, that's a really good one. And that's honestly what I grew up hunting for does. Because like I said, we pretty much always just hunted does when I was younger.
Yeah.
Or just deer in general. We were just deer hunting. We weren't really like necessarily seeking out a buck specifically. We were just kind of hoping we'd run into a buck. Mm-hmm. And those transition areas were always good. And trail intersections, those are always good, especially maybe later in the year if the feed tree thing is kind of passed by you, or if you're just having trouble with feed trees, or if the feed trees didn't really make that year and there's a really low mast crop and you're having trouble finding a hot feed tree. The transition areas are something that could be good pretty much any time of year. I mean, they're good from early season. They actually get better, I think, as the season goes on, because early season, you know, they might just be bedded out in an oak flat somewhere. Mm-hmm. We've hunted some places in South Alabama where they do that, where they literally just lay up under like water oaks, and they sit there and they stand up and they walk around and eat, and then they lay back down and it's open underneath it and you really can't get to them unless you bump them off of it. And that can be a pretty tough situation, but that's why those transition areas kind of come in.
Yeah. I mean, definitely, you know, does are going to do like what general deer are going to do when it comes to, like, working transitions. You know, I've hunted places in Arkansas and Tennessee where, you have fence rows. Like, old fence rows running through some timber.
There's a YouTube video on that.
There's probably, there's at least one out there. And those old fence rows are kind of interesting because, again, it's a subtle transition. You can kind of see them on aerial imagery. Again, we just did a mapping video. You can go and look at it on the YouTube channel and see, you know, what I'm talking about, what those fence transitions. And I've had, again, really good success in those areas, hunting in around that fence line where you find deer crossing, but also deer working up and down. And when I mean fence, it's not like, you know, we're out in, you know, Kansas or whatever, and you're hunting like a dirty fence row in between wide open, you know, cut crops. I'm not talking about that at all. I'm talking about fence rows that are running through timber. And it seems like, for whatever reason, like, you have bigger trees that are growing along that fence row because they weren't, you know, whenever that used to be pasture land or whatever, you know, those trees are a lot bigger than everything else around it. And those little transition areas have been really, if I was going to go in blind, like, that's a transition area I'd feel pretty confident, even with a bow, of getting potential an opportunity in there.
Yeah.
Whether it's a morning or evening. And typically, on those fence rows, depending on, like, what area of the country you're in, there's a decent chance you may have some kind of oaks in and along that fence row that, again, are some bigger trees that specifically, again, earlier in the season, you know, talking October, like, especially like October, could be one of those locations that you find not only a feed tree there, but you have a really good transition that you can set up on, and you can have deer coming from, like, 360 degrees around you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something you targeted in Georgia this year, right? It didn't work out for you?
Did I hunt that in Georgia?
Yeah.
This whole last season is a blur.
In Georgia early season, there's a fence row.
Oh.
You found the buck tracks crossing it and whatnot.
Well, yeah. That fence row was a little bit different. So that fence row didn't have as it didn't have as much of a transition edge on the, like, on the edge of the fence itself. That it seemed like they had cut, whenever they had, like, come in there and planted pines and everything, they had cut almost pretty much up to the fence. So, like, you really didn't have, like, that transition, you know, I found in other places. But, yeah, you are right. I did do that in Georgia and cut a big set of buck tracks cutting back and forth and gambled on it. You know, thought it was like, hey, he's going back to bed in the mornings. Maybe we can catch him slipping back through here, you know, just after daylight. And it did not work for us.
Did not work out.
I'll say that. I think we did a podcast talking about this when Hunter Rudd, who was my cameraman for that hunt, we were walking in that morning and there was a, couldn't tell what it was. I didn't have a bright enough light. It looked like a big body deer that was 25 to 30 yards from the tree we were going to climb.
Beat you in there, huh?
Beat us in there. And I'm like, that could have been, I told him when we climbed the tree, I'm like, that could have been him. And when I say big, I mean, you could tell, like, it was a deer. And it seemed like it had a pretty big head. I just couldn't see a rack for, you know, anything. But again, it was an area, one of those transitions, and they, again, just didn't have a, you know, a good chance there when he was coming through. But those fence rows are awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome spots. Like, that's one of those things, like, even in Tennessee, when I had the whole, I don't know what we call them, pincushion doe from, I guess, 2021. It was like that with her.
God bless her.
Whereas, again, a little fence row up against a skinny little piece of hardwoods that was on the backside of a little field. You had a back wall on the backside of the hardwoods. And it was a perfect little funnel where, again, thinking that these deer were going to come from, like, the CRP kind of field, come through this little transition, this old fence row, and kind of swing back into the field where it had just been some cut corn. And it worked out great. The problem was, if my shooting was a little bit better, and getting rusty shot a little bit, she definitely knew I was there because she stopped. I had walked up. This is another thing about, like, this is doe hunting. This is everything. Especially bow hunting. You better be able to shoot to the spot, the last spot you stood at.
Oh, yeah.
Before you climb a tree, you better be able to shoot to that same spot, okay? Because your ground disturbance, you know, walking around out there, they are going to smell you. And that bit me in the butt because I had walked up a little bit too far up. And I was like, oh, crap, I'm too much, like, in this little hub of activity where all these deer can come through. I've got to backtrack. And when I backtracked, I thought the tree I climbed and I could shoot exactly that spot. And I could. But the problem was there was another tree in my way where when those does came in, it was 3 that morning or that afternoon, when the biggest of the does stepped out in that little opening, she was right on the edge of where I had been standing, and all I could see was her head. I had a tree kind of covering up a lot of her. Thankfully, and she stepped out, and it turned her quarter away from me, again, kind of on high alert, and hit her high. But it was one of those things, that was one of those hunts that I'm like, dude, if I shoot this doe, it's an hour and a half, almost 2 hours before dark. If I shoot this doe and just, you know, make a great shot on her, there's a very good chance a buck could do the exact same thing coming from that bedding area and doing the same thing, like, right at last light and get an opportunity to be able to, again, tag a buck and a doe, which you can do up there. And anyways, that did not happen. We had some issues. But long story short, that's one of those situations. I love the opportunity early season to be able to kill does like that because a couple different things. Number one, you're hunting fairly unpressured deer, especially early in the season. Like, they haven't been bumped. They haven't been harassed a whole bunch. So they're acting very normal. You can hunt deer sign. You can hunt tracks, trails, the whole nine yards around feed sign and do pretty good. But also with that, you have the opportunity at potentially killing a doe, mm-hmm. and also potentially killing a buck in that same location. Because, again, the bucks, depending on how the area sets up and the food source and everything else and how the bedding is around it, there's a good chance there's probably a buck bedded close by, too, where you could actually maybe tag a doe. And if it's legal in your state, you could also tag a buck, too, a little bit later on, like getting closer to last light when he comes in. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you get a ton of opportunity like that, specifically during bow season. That I don't really see that a whole bunch later in the season, per se. But then again, when it starts getting cold, mine's kind of switching to, you know, we're trying to tag a big buck, especially if we're starting into pre-rut.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, I really don't want to shoot a doe right now.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like whole Wes Moe mindset. Like, I'm not shooting a doe or, like, you know.
Not shooting my bait.
Or Wesley Moe or
Jerry
Morphis. You know, when it starts getting that time of the year, I'm like, I really don't want to shoot her now. Like, even though it might be like an either sex hunt or whatever, or I can tag a doe too, I'm like, I don't really want to do it now, because now there's a legit chance that, you know, she could come through and that buck's, you know, kind of checking her out, you know, as well, coming through a little bit later. Houndstooth Game Call's Dixie Hen Slate was just voted the overall best turkey call by Field and Stream Outdoors, and trust me, it's super easy to run and be extremely dynamic when you're in the turkey woods. Now, we've mentioned a couple of these calls in the past, like the Spurmaster and the Success Call in a past episode with both Gary Vines and Lyle Gilbert of Houndstooth Game Calls, and it was funny enough, y'all actually bought every Spurmaster call and Success Call they had. Now, pay attention to their website. They're going to have some more come up in stock in the next few days. So when they come available, make sure you get one if you did not purchase one before they sold out last time. Both the Spurmaster and the Success Call are fantastic for hunting high-pressure turkeys, whether you're on a hunting club where you have a lot of other members hunting those same turkeys, or if you're on public land. Again, both of those calls will make you sound a little bit different from everybody else and be a lot more subtle in your calling technique and be able to really help close those distance with those gobblers. So if you want to give Houndstooth Game Calls a try, go to houndstoothgamecalls.com. Use the promo code SOP24. Again, promo code SOP24 for 15% off houndtoothgamecalls.com. Man, Mark's Outdoors is your one-stop shop for everything outdoor and shooting related. They're a family-owned business that's been around for over 40 years now, been serving the Birmingham area, but now they have opened their doors to everyone across the United States through their online store. Again, me and Andrew have been using Mark's Outdoors for years now. They have unbelievable supplies of literally anything that we need, we can pick up from Mark's Outdoors. They're even carrying different saddle companies, sticks, platforms, the whole nine yards at Mark's Outdoors. And again, if you don't live in Alabama and you don't want to make the drive to Birmingham, you can go over to their website, marksoutdoors.com, and actually shop on their online store to get awesome deals on different products that you may be needing right now and be able to get to you in a very timely manner as well. So give Mark's Outdoors a try. We promise you, you'll enjoy them. They have unbelievable customer service and some of the best guys in the industry. TruLock Chokes has been made in Georgia since 1981 and offering a wide range of chokes, over 2,000 different chokes for all kinds of shooting activities. You might be wondering why you'd want to purchase a TruLock choke, and it's to improve your shotgun performance. Absolutely guaranteed. And as a great example, we have Andrew Maxwell here. And Andrew, you've had some pretty good luck, again, kind of switching out chokes and trying out the Precision Hunter choke from TruLock. So, Andrew, what's been your experience so far?
Yeah, I've used the same choke for several years now. I never really thought much of it, and I got the TruLock choke in. I patterned my gun with the first choke at 30 and 50, and then I switched to the TruLock and changed from 30 to 50. And the 50-yard pattern on my gun with the TruLock choke is unbelievable. Like, everybody's jaws were dropping. Like, when we were out there with Mike and Sam, we were all super impressed. I mean, it's throwing a better pattern at 50 now than it was throwing at 40 before my old choke.
And Andrew, you're shooting the Precision Hunter choke from TruLock. It's a great option. Same chokes I have in my shotgun. So guys, if you want to give TruLock a shot this spring, you can head over to TruLockChokes.com. That's TruLockChokes.com. You can also use the promo code Southern at checkout at TruLockChokes.com and save 10% on your order. Again, give TruLock a shot this spring, especially if you're not happy with the performance of your shotgun, and shoot with a more deadly pattern with TruLock.
Yeah, that's another thing that kind of makes it hard, too, that you just mentioned is the either sex hunts on WMAs. You know, if you're a big gun hunter, which we definitely are, you got limited days, and this is true for a lot of places we've hunted. You got limited days that you can go out there and shoot one with a gun. You know, like on a lot of the places we hunt, you've got like, I don't know,
3 days here, skips a week or two. Here's another 3 days or 2 days.
Some of them you get 3 days period all year out of your gun days to shoot does. So there'll be more than three gun days, but only on like three of those gun days can you shoot a doe. And then on National Forest in Alabama, I think it's like a 21-day window that's doe days where you can shoot them with a gun. Now, if you bow hunt, that simplifies everything because you can shoot a doe any day of the season with a bow.
We're talking Alabama here specifically.
Yeah, in Alabama. But, yeah, that's just some other things that kind of make it a little bit difficult sometimes is sometimes there's regulations in place that aren't going to let you shoot does. But it depends on like where you go especially. Because some parts of the state, there's a lot more does, so there's a lot more opportunity at it. But, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I'd say that it's kind of interesting because hunting does, I feel like, is really just almost a combination of a lot of the other stuff that we talk about on the show all the time. Like, if you're finding fresh tracks and you're finding feed sign and you're just finding general deer sign all over the place, and you're finding a concentration of that fresh sign, you're probably already on the does.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're doing that to buck hunt, and a lot of guys that we talk to, we used to ask that question a lot. I think we asked Glenn Solomon that question, like back in those years. I think we used to ask the question a lot, like, how do you know that you're in the right spot or whatever? And we're talking about hunting bucks, but a lot of those guys will say, well, I should be seeing like a bunch of deer. Now, some of them say the exact opposite of that, you know, for buck hunting. They don't want to be seeing a ton of deer. They want to be seeing the deer. But there have been a lot of guys who we've talked to who, when they're buck hunting, they're like, I just want to be in the middle of the deer. I want fresh sign. I want a lot of sightings. I want consistent sightings, or I'm moving on. And they just keep moving and moving and moving until they actually locate that, and then they kind of buckle down and hunt it, and hopefully hunt it smart so you can, you know, continue to hunt it over and over and over again.
Yeah, which, you know, not to get us sidetracked here, but going into this season, you should have your suppressor here by gun season. It'd be probably decent.
Ordered a suppressor in mid-February.
Yeah,
roughly.
So I'll have mine here hopefully in a couple months, which I'm excited about. But the not to get sidetracked on the suppressor thing. But one thing that I've realized after talking to other guys that are, you know, using suppressors, there's something about like shooting a deer, especially if you're going to hunt on a food plot, especially like talking like a hunting club here. If you're going to shoot deer on a food plot, something about trying to be like as least invasive as possible, which is a couple things: access, your setup, you be able to get out clean. But also, if you're going to kill a deer in that location, you know, try to do it as, I guess, stealthily as possible. And I think we've all had situations where, like, it seems like certain times of the year, like, deer don't care about gunshots, like, at all. Mm-hmm. Like, I've hunted with, like, multiple people. Like, me and my brother, we shot our first two bucks ever, first two deer ever, 30 minutes apart, same shooting house. I shot one. 30 minutes later, his buck stepped out, and he shot his deer. And that was, super, I guess you'd say, early, kind of pre-rut kind of time frame. And, you know, I think all of us have had a situation where you shoot a deer and 30 minutes later, 40 minutes later, another deer pops out with its doe, another buck,
yeah,
whatever.
Happens all the time.
But definitely I can see like a big thing of like, you know, if you're going to shoot deer on a food plot, like you got to try to be as like just as stealthy as possible, especially if you're going to want to come back and hunt that at any other point in the season.
But the
whole idea about just getting on deer, I think the big thing is trying to figure out like how much effort do you want to put into it? Okay. And what I mean by this is like, do you want to go out there and like, say you're like hunting public land and like, I want to kill a deer with a bow. You're going to have a mindset that I would say is slightly different than if I was hunting on a club or something like that.
Yeah.
Cause if I was hunting on a club and I just wanted to kill a deer, kind of like Mike, like your stepdad, give an example for him. He's probably not going to bow hunt really at all. Like, he's got a bow, but I doubt he's really going to bow hunt. And
I don't know, man. Mike is into it. He's getting after it. Well, like, I've talked about this before. Like, you get a lot of people into hunting, and, you know, some of them, like, really take to it. Some of them kind of don't, and they're kind of lukewarm about it. Dude, Mike's been getting after it. I've been impressed with how Mike. So, I don't know. Maybe he'll bow hunt. I told him that that bow hunting would help a lot. Well, his chances.
For sure. But where I was trying to get at, like, say with him, is, you know, I know he wants to kill a couple deer next year. I would recommend that first week of gun season, go kill you a couple does. Go sit a food plot. Go sit a power line. Sit in an area that they're coming out to pretty regularly already, and they feel very comfortable. And get them out of the way. Like, just, you know, and it sounds terrible, especially if someone's never shot here. Just get them out of the way. But, like, get some killing experience.
Yeah.
Taking a couple does. And then try to fine-tune of how are you going to go about, if you want to kill a buck, no matter whether it's a year-and-a-half-year-old buck, little rack buck, or you're trying to kill a mature buck, it doesn't matter. But then trying to figure out, you know, through, like, you know, guys at the podcast and stuff that we've talked about, how you need to change that mindset a little bit more so, kind of getting later towards the pre-rut time period, and how to, you know, buckle down there that time period, but not worry about, like, crap, now I got to go find some more meat because I didn't kill something, you know, early in the season when I might have had a, you know, a pretty good opportunity.
Yeah.
Because I feel so bad. When he missed that deer, dude, I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, dude, that, I'll take the wind out of your sail, dude.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was joking with him because that was his very first hunt that we went on. And we went walking down to that food plot, and the deer were already in the food plot. And we've, like, put the freaking crawl on them and everything because they were too far, and so we literally belly crawled a good ways up to him. So it was kind of fun, but I mean, he was shouldered up on the rifle within 10 minutes of leaving the truck, and so there was a moment, I'm not gonna lie, where we were sitting there and I was like, man, it's a little bit too easy. Like, it needs a little bit of adversity here. And he got it. He definitely got it. He hunted a good bit with me this year, and we got skunked pretty much every time after that. That's what I was telling him after that first hunt. I'm like, man, that was a really good hunt. That was, like, action-packed. Like, we saw deer immediately. We got to stalk them. That doesn't happen very often here. You just don't get that kind of opportunity to do, like, a spot and stalk. But just the way the area is set up, it kind of set up for that. And then, yeah, the rest of the year, we kind of rode the struggle bus a little bit. But, you know, it's all part of the experience. You know,
see, I had the same thing when I was taking my sister's fiance out. I'm like, dude, you know, first morning we went out, and he's hunted a decent amount. He's hunted for a couple of years, just hasn't had success. He's passed some, like, doe fawns, like some, like, real young deer, just because he's like, I want to kill a decent doe. But, like, we went on public land. I told him, like, dude, we're going on public land. Like, I feel pretty confident we get you on a deer, on a doe, but there's no guarantees in any of this, okay? And I think that's the cool thing, like, when you go out there and have experience, it's especially if you're hunting a place that's not, when you're hunting a property that has a decent amount of pressure, it is kind of a reality check. It's not you just go walk in the woods and shoot a deer. There are times like that. There are definitely times when, like, yeah. I mean, you hear stories all the time, guys walking into the woods, shoots a giant buck, walks, steps out in front of him on his way to stand, boom, yep, tagged out, ready to roll. But a lot of times it's not that case. And, like, with Gavin, you know, my sister's fiance, you know, he's got to see or experience having, like, a big mature buck, you know, within a couple hundred yards of us. We didn't get a shot at, and a bunch of other deer, a couple of does come slipping down the ridge right at last light. I couldn't get them on the gun in time, and they slipped right past us. And he was just talking about, like, how much fun that was, just, like, having that many deer that close, and, like, being, like, right in the middle of the action. And that definitely, I think, helps, especially when you're talking, like, a newer hunter, you know, getting excited about it, is, like, again, like, those failures, and I told him, like, these failures is what's going to make it really sweet when you finally get that deer.
Oh, 100%.
Which is, like, what Travis Murray, there's a quote from the first episode we interviewed with Travis. Like, Travis Murray, I think it's, like, episode 211 or 213, one of the first two times we had him on. He talks about, like, failure is, like, the seasoning that makes success taste so sweet.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's a good quote.
And I 100% believe that. It's like, dude, when you, like, freaking get drugged through the mud and all of a sudden, like, something clicks, you're able to execute, that's awesome. But also, like, I was telling Gavin, I'm like, dude, like, even if we did have success, like, I want you to think, like, why did we have success? Like, the situation, the setup, how the deer were coming through here, what we were set up on. I was trying to talk to him about thermals and wind, and he's very interested in learning more, kind of like Mike. But it's one of those things that it takes some time. And again, even like myself, you know, I feel, you know, I'm not the most, you know, seasoned, you know, big buck killer, but, you know, just the consistency, you know, of course, having time to hunt more definitely helps, but there's, like, times when, like, I still struggle, like, especially, like, just trying to kill a doe during, you know, especially later in the season. It's kind of funny thinking about it.
Yeah.
Because, like, other times I'm like, oh, dude, it's like, no problem, and then you get to, like, something about, like, it's still, like, December. I'm like, do I really want to kill a doe right now? Especially if we're hunting in Alabama, it's like the rut. I'm like, you know, there was a time this year with a muzzleloader, I could have smoked one at 50 yards from me, sitting on the ground with a muzzleloader. And I was like, man, this would be a perfect deer for Pepper to track. Because I'm like, dude, I, you know, right behind the shoulder, probably run 60, 80 yards, put Pepper on it, get a good, you know, good practice track in. But I'm like, nah, dude, this is a spot that, you know, I think there could be a big buck come through here. Maybe not right now, but maybe in a couple of days or next week.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, ended up not shooting her. And then, you know, after the fact, I'm like, probably should have shot that deer.
Yep. Hindsight is 20/20. Well, there's, I don't know, there's a lot of situations like that where we kind of like throttle back on the bloodthirst, I guess, a little bit. Where we're like, yeah, I don't know if I want to shoot that doe, or I don't know if I want to pack her out, or whatever.
You say, well, I say that, but then, like, Arkansas, like, during the muzzler hunt this year, I was on the phone. Was I on the phone with you when I shot the doe?
No, you hung up and then called back.
Yeah, like, 15 minutes later.
You're like, got another one.
I got another one. Yeah, yeah. And I was, yeah. I was actually, I texted the game warden because I was confused on the regs for the place. And I was like, hey, I just shot a buck with the muzzler. And I was like, I texted him. I was like, hey, can I shoot a doe too, like, same day? He's like, yeah, you can get one doe too. That's fine. And I'm like, cool. And then, like, not 5 minutes later, I hear something behind me and see two does coming through. I'm like, you are done. You're going on a kayak ride. We're floating you back across the river.
Yep.
And yeah, that was interesting. But, you know, the fun thing is, dude, when you get in the mindset, especially like early on when someone's like learning like how to hunt and just trying to have success, it is so fun because at any point in time, there could be a legal deer step out that you can more than willing to be able to take.
Oh, yeah. That's like with Mike this year. It was a lot of fun bringing him because I'm like, hey, literally any deer that steps out, you can shoot it. Because our antler point restrictions on our club, they don't matter if someone's never shot a deer before. So I'm like, dude, literally any deer that crosses our path is on the menu today. Yeah. And that's a fun feeling going out in the woods with that, you know. Like, it just adds a lot to it. But to kind of get to a point of wrapping it up, and then we got to read some reviews, dude, because we haven't, with our episode format lately, we haven't actually got to read reviews in a while, so we're going to get through some of those. But with the doe hunting thing, what would you say are some good rules of thumb if somebody's listening to this? And like I said, we've gotten requests for the subject before, but if someone's listening to this and they're like, you know what, this fall, I just want to kill some freaking deer. I want to get after it. I want to get in there and just like get some numbers under my belt. What would be like a rule of thumb in your mind of like how to do that?
Number one, bow season, I'd be trying to find features. I'd try to find some kind of mass crop that the deer are feeding on. And the problem is if there's not a good mass crop in your area, like it was kind of in central Alabama, it's one of those things that maybe you've got to lean a little bit more towards the food plots and kind of hunt, maybe not on the food plot, but in and around those food plots where those deer are kind of coming in and out to them. That would be a huge part during bow season. And then come gun season, a couple of things. If you're on a club, lease, got your own family property, if you got food plots, if you're hunting with feeders, whatever, you can get one. Normally, typically, you can get a couple does early in the season, right when gun season opens up, you know, in and around whatever that food source is. You know, the food plots, bait stations, it's still some of the feed trees for sure. But also, like, as it gets a little bit later in the season, I want to find, and maybe this is probably something you want to talk about, but I want to find an area where I can see a pretty good distance, over probably 200 yards, that I can shoot. And also, it comes down to, like, your shooting capabilities. Like, we talked about with Mike.
Yeah.
Like, with him, you know, he's still got to learn his gun to be able to shoot confidently. Because, I mean, he mentioned even, like, when we were out shooting with him, he's like, dude, you know, I probably need this deer within, like, 80 yards.
Yep.
Feel comfortable shooting. And that's perfectly fine. But if you shoot your gun a decent amount, your muzzleloader, whatever, put yourself in a situation where you can see either down, if it's legal where you're at, whether it's a piece of public land and it's closed access roadways, or if it's on a hunting club where you have a closed access roadway or old roadbed or logging roads, that's a great spot to set up on where you can watch down a straightaway or like a bend in the road where you can watch two directions. You can see for 100 yards either direction. That's a fantastic spot. Anywhere where I can see a decent distance through some thick cover that the deer are clearly using, looking at tracks, crossing the roads, walking up and down the roads, that's an excellent point. Or, again, if you feel very confident in your shooting capabilities, going and hunting around like fresh cutovers, like that were cut the year you're hunting, or like during hunting season or just before hunting season, up to like 2 to 3 years old and sitting up, getting high in a tree, whether you're using a saddle, whether you're using a climber, or lock on, whatever, and getting in a spot where I can shoot, you know, a few hundred yards, maybe even further. Like I got my comfort range of what I can shoot to.
Yep.
Just whatever that comfort range is, be able to get in a spot where you can see a lot of good feeding and bedding cover and be able to just use your binos and find a deer, pick it out, and then see if it's what you want to shoot and then execute the shot.
Yep.
So what about you?
I had a guy ask me this actually last year, and one just kind of surefire way that I've gone about killing some does in the past that worked really well for me was if you've got gas lines and power lines on your area, especially if it's kind of hilly, one really good way is just get on one of those suckers where you can see for a long ways. And even if you're not necessarily hunting right then, like I've done this in the past where I've sat in a spot where I can see like a mile or something down one of these gas lines. And of course there's like, you know, little dips and draws in it where I can't see, you know, everything, but I can see for a really long ways, and I can see like multiple hillsides out in front of me, and I'll just see where I see a doe cross, and then I will stand up and I will walk down there and get within 200 yards of it and then hunt that. And then, you know, usually that's a pretty surefire way of getting on a good trail pretty quickly, like an active trail. Because if one crosses there, there's a decent chance another one's going to cross there. You know, she's crossing there for a reason. So that's one way that I found that works really well. And then kind of like what you just said, the feed tree thing works very well. Anything where you're just keying in on deer sign and you're getting on top of where a lot of deer are hanging out, and you're moving and you're focusing on that good sign, that good fresh sign, I mean, you really just can't go wrong with that. And that's what I mean when I say that it relates back to a lot of the stuff we talk about with hunting bucks and what a lot of these guests talk about. You know, outside of like the really hardcore buck specific tasks, anything that's talked about for bucks will work for does.
Mm-hmm.
And with most of the tactics you hear on here, I'll just again reiterate, if you're not seeing any deer, then you probably should be moving. You know, you should be seeing some deer, unless you're doing like the hardest core, like big buck hunter, like you're hunting the weirdest spot ever, trying to kill that 9-year-old buck that like hangs off by himself. You should be seeing something. Mm-hmm. You know? And so if you're not getting those encounters, then it's probably time to move and be mobile, and that fresh sign is king. I mean, tracks are king to me. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of thing that helped me start killing more deer on public land is when I actually started paying attention to that fresh sign and not sitting spots just to sit spots, because they theoretically should be good based on, you know, something you saw on the map or something. You know, maybe it's something you heard on this podcast and you think that this scenario sets up just perfect. But if you're going and trying that tactic in a certain spot and you're not seeing anything, it's time to move.
Yeah.
You know? And just one last thing to kind of, I don't know, there's a little bit of nuance to it too, because it also depends on your area. If you've got a really low deer density, then if you go a couple hunts and don't see anything, yeah, that's probably not the end of the world. But if you live in a really high deer density area, like if you live like south of Montgomery in Alabama and you're not seeing deer on every hunt or every other hunt, then like, dude, you should move and you should rethink what you're doing if you're not seeing them. You know, there's obviously external factors, like if you just got like a super, super, super thick club, kind of like one of our Patreon collaborators from earlier this year, his club is just like insanely thick down in South Alabama. But like, you kind of get my point. If you're not seeing them, don't be afraid to pick up and move and just kind of jump around until you actually do find where they're at, and then kind of take it from there.
Mm-hmm.
Capitalize on it. Trail cameras are your friend too. I mean, I like throwing trail cameras on trails and stuff. Actually, one thing I did like way back in the day when I was, I think I was in high school maybe, or I might have just started junior college, is I would only hunt trails. Like, that's what we grew up doing. I would hunt deer trails, and more specifically, I'd hunt where multiple deer trails ran into each other. And I would hunt these deer trails all the time and not see anything, basically. And looking back, it was access. It was 100%. I'd, like, never even paid attention to access, and that's probably why. But I would throw trail cameras on these trails, and I would see if there's any kind of pattern to, like, when the deer were coming through based on, like, a wind direction or something like that. And sure enough, there would usually be some kind of pattern to it, like a northwest wind or something like that is when they would come through. And I started doing that and actually seeing a lot of deer mm-hmm. and killing some does. So that would be another option is, you know, throw some trail cameras out and try to draw some conclusions on when the deer are coming through areas, like why they're coming through areas. But again, just relate it back to sign. Sign is always king. Always, always, always king. So, yeah, I don't know. This has been a kind of a fun thing to cover. I'd be curious of people's feedback on this because we do get this request for, like, this subject a lot, and we could go find some guests on this. We wanted to just kind of do one, just me and Jacob, one so we could, you know, just kind of chat it up, but also so we could do reviews and stuff because we haven't done reviews in a long time. But definitely we want some feedback on this and what you guys thought of it and kind of if what y'all want to hear expanded on the subject because it is a cool subject that doesn't get talked about a ton that I'm sure would help a lot of people out.
Oh, absolutely. Well, to kind of get to some of these reviews, I'm going to start out. We got a bunch of them that we're going to read, but kind of start out. This is from Native to Nature. And this is, again, on iTunes. Everybody's been leaving us five-star reviews on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Greatly appreciate it. We're trying to get to 1,000 reviews. And we're currently sitting at 973 as we're sitting here. So I'm going to start with, again, Native to Nature. Title is Post-Season Review, 5 stars. I want to take the moment to thank you guys for continuing to pump out content for the Southern Deer Hunter. I came up empty-handed this past season because I chose to focus my efforts on a mature buck. Although I didn't punch a tag, I saw more deer than ever. My mixed bag of tactics from several guests on your show helped me find some promising areas with good sign. I still feel successful because I have a lot of work with within this season or with the seasons to come. I plan to follow the same path next season and use this year's intel to find the type of deer I'm looking for. Keep it coming, guys. You're helping a working man make the most of his time. Awesome, man.
Sweet. All right, this one is from Kill 'Em Quietly. He said top-notch and
respond
episode 451. He calls me out a little bit here.
That's why I let you read this one.
This is a good review. Long-time listener from Louisiana. And he said, yeah, bring some more flatland stuff. Since y'all hooked me with the Glenn Solomon episode, rest in peace. Obviously a hard-to-top episode, but you guys have been super consistent with great content. I'd like to compliment your audio, too. It's always great. Can't say that about a lot of podcasts, and the effort doesn't go unnoticed. We appreciate that, man. It's been a constant struggle for 5 years to get good audio quality, because it is much harder than it seems. Finally getting around to give you that 5-star review. Episode 451 cracked me up. I'm still laughing, picturing Andrew and the giant 20 feet apart cursing each other. Reminds me of that real skit with the guys on the boats where he's like, what's your name?
Ezekiel!
F you, Ezekiel! I made that scrape yesterday. That's pretty funny. So, yeah, that was episode 151 for a little backstory is where I talked about this guy this year on a WMA that I was hunting who literally came up to me before daylight and climbed a tree 20 yards from me. And I might have lost my temper a little bit. I'm not going to lie. I said some words and stuff, and it wasn't good. I'm still laughing at the mental picture. As an aside, you asked how to handle that situation. I know you worked hard to get there and all that business. Been there, in parentheses. You should have been the bigger man and went along with him facing the other way, as awkward as it was. Never make an enemy when you can make a friend. You know how handy a giant would be to help carry one out. Find that guy and invite him on the show, if nothing else, just for the hilarity. Kill 'Em Quietly, Louisiana, Mississippi. That's a man. That's pretty good. It would be kind of entertaining to find that guy and have him on the show. Maybe I can make amends. Jacob thinks I'm too bitter.
Andrew,
I'm getting over it now.
Andrew doesn't know how to forgive and forget. So.
Look, I'm getting over it now. I'm getting over it. It's fine that it happened.
All right, so. This next one's from AUM Gold, Gold, titled The Best Southern Hunting Podcast. 5 stars. If you live in the South and love to hunt, then this is the podcast for you. And we appreciate it. Keep it nice, short, and sweet.
All right. Dustin King 7, breaking down regions, 5 stars. I agree with Andrew, and oftentimes people refer to Birmingham as South Alabama, to where if you divide the states into one-thirds, it is nowhere near, which brings up an interesting point on how different true deep south deer are versus northern deer. Deep south deer are truly harder to hunt slash harvest, and this is coming from a traveling hunter. I think that stems from, again, our discussion on, like, south versus kind of south versus not south southern states. I think that's what that stemmed from, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So I put out a map, which is 100% correct on which states are in the south and which ones aren't. So that's a...
All right. So this is the last review. This is from S.R. Adam, titled First Turkey Content Didn't Disappoint. 5 stars. Awesome first turkey episode of the year, fellas. Gotta agree with the premise that there ain't no book to prepare you for turkey warfare. Unfortunately, we all had to go out there and ace up until we figure it out. But that's the fun part. Thank God for 2-year-old gobblers, LOL. Keep them coming, fellas. Adam.
Yeah, referring to the episode we did with Matt Persons earlier this year, that was our first turkey episode of the year. That was a really good one. That was a fun turkey episode, man. But hey, he's exactly right about that. It's kind of funny. I was talking to Parker McDonald from Southern Ground about mm-hmm. this a couple weeks ago, where we were talking about turkey content, and we were both like, man, it's kind of hard as like a content producer. It's kind of hard to do turkey content because, like, y'all know that our deer stuff is like very tactically driven a lot of times. You know, we're talking about how to go out and kill deer, and it just doesn't really work that well for turkeys. You know, everything is so dynamic. It's hard to be like, go do this and you'll kill a turkey. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like with deer, you can predict pretty reasonably what you need to do to go kill a deer. It's like, you know, go find a food plot that the deer are hammering and go sit on it with a rifle opening weekend, and you got a pretty good chance, you know, if you're on private land, or if you're on public land, you know, go find yourself a feed tree and just kind of walk around and hunt until you find that feed tree. But with turkeys, it's just really not that simple. I mean, it's such a dynamic, like, interaction with the bird that it's hard to sit here and be like, if you do this, you will kill a turkey. And, you know, the turkey hunting thing, like, I don't know, it's a little bit easier to produce it from maybe, like, a storytelling standpoint. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you get a lot of tips from those stories. That's kind of what we're trying to do with it. But anyways, that was a total tangent.
Yeah. But anyways, appreciate that last review from Adam. It's pretty awesome. So appreciate everybody's feedback. One thing I want to do a quick shout-out is for all the listeners who is an Apple subscriber. Mm-hmm. So an option that you guys have to listen to the podcast is you can actually listen ad-free to the podcast where you don't hear any kind of advertisement at all on the show. And all you got to do is, if you're an Apple subscriber, which per our analytics, about almost 82% of you guys are listening on Apple products and listen to Apple podcasts. If you subscribe, again, I think it's like $2.99 a month or $20.99.
It's $20 a year.
$20 a year. Anyways, super easy, super simple. Helps us out tremendously. The money does come back to the podcast, which, again, helps out tremendously for us. But with the ad-free content, you actually get some bonus episodes. In the fall, we were doing this, or well, early fall, we were doing some what we called In the Field podcast series. And we actually took a little bit of leave of AdSense on that. Got a little busy. Actually broke our recorder that we were using to record that. So we were able to take some of the money that, again, these Apple subscribers have been donating to the show, and actually go out and buy a couple new recorders so that we can be mic'd up at all times. And we actually just got back, again, the day that we're recording this podcast, which is in, again, March, just was able to do a new In the Field podcast episode, which, again, is released to specifically Apple subscribers. So, again, it's a bonus episode. Bonus episodes that come out for Apple subscribers. So, again, you guys subscribe.
And it's on Patreon,
too. It's on Patreon, but it's on Patreon or Apple subscribers. And, again, by the time hopefully you're hearing this episode, that next In the Field podcast has already come out. So, again, greatly appreciate all that support there, guys. Again, it directly comes back to the show. It's a huge support from the show side of things. And just appreciate everybody that's already subscribed on Apple. So,
yes, sir.
Got that. Also, big shout-out to everyone that's been checking out the YouTube videos.
Oh, yeah.
YouTube is up and running, guys. Video content is booming right now.
So you need to go over to YouTube, search the Southern Outdoors Men. If you even search Southern Outdoors Man, we still pop up. So anyways, still works for us. But
still worked out.
Make sure you're subscribed to the YouTube channel and check out some of the videos. We're trying to drop videos. We're working on dropping videos every single week for you guys. Get some map scouting videos on there. And just bought a boat that we're doing some videos on as well. If you're interested in seeing some of that, did a kayak breakdown and done a lot of other stuff and get a lot of things on the table for us to work on. So go check out the YouTube channel. Check out some of those videos. We appreciate y'all's support over there. If you enjoy some of the videos, give it a thumbs up and also share it with some buddies. And hey, even better yet, go post a comment on there. Let us know, you know, what you liked about the video and also what you want to see from future videos from the podcast. So appreciate all that. And also appreciate everybody's been joining Patreon. Again, Patreon's been awesome. Rocking and rolling now with the collaborators tier, which Andrew, maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Yep. Collaborator tier on Patreon is basically a tier where if you're wanting to get a little bit more out of the content that you hear on the show and you're wanting to go a little bit deeper and you're basically wanting Jacob and I to hop on the phone with you and talk about your property and kind of help you out with it, that is the destination for you. You can go on there and join. And when you join the collaborator tier, we have a limited number of slots available for that every month. We will reach out to you. We'll get a little bit of information on where your property is at. We'll get a little bit of information on how it hunts, you know, the people that hunt out there, just kind of what the situation is. And then we'll actually map scout it, drop a bunch of pins on the property that catch our eye. So Jacob and I, the way that we actually normally do it is we both get the property and we're like on a Monday or something, we're like, all right, let's both map scout it today. And we map scout it separately. So Jacob goes and drops all his pins. I go drop all my pins. And then we come together to film a video for you. So the video, we were going to do just like a shorter video, but they all end up being like an hour and a half long.
Yeah, they
so
all end
we
up
can't shut our mouths. So we get on there and we go and actually step through each pin and we're like, hey, look, me and Jacob both dropped a pin on this spot. This is why. And we both give our opinions on it and usually also relate it back to a guest at sometime in the past who's like, hey, so-and-so mentioned hunting stuff like this, and this is what that looks like on your property. And we go through, and of course, we send you that video, and then we send you all those pins as well, and then we get on the phone with you, and we're like, hey, what do you think? And we kind of talk through some stuff and whatnot, and it's a lot of fun. We really enjoy doing that, and we've had some success stories come from that this fall.
Yeah, so. And you're going to hear from some of those guys on some future episodes of the podcast. We're going to kind of interview them about the success that they had after kind of going through that whole tier in that program and kind of hear it from word of mouth from them. So, again, it's been fairly successful for us so far and getting excited to work with some other listeners specifically on it. And not going to lie, it's kind of fun because, you know, while we're doing this whole program and even after we break down the property, you know, if you have questions, you can text or call us and kind of work through on, you know, kind of how everything's playing out for you throughout the season. And it's been super exciting from our standpoint, just kind of seeing, you know, listeners have success from doing this. So if it interests you for this coming season, let us know. I'd love to help you out, especially if you're joining a new club or got some family property or even some public land. It doesn't matter. We'll kind of look it over and kind of break it down. So super excited about that. But other than that, Andrew, do we got anything else?
No, I think that does it.
Yep, awesome. Well, appreciate everybody listening to this week's episode. Again, make sure you tune in for the next episode of the Southern Outdoorsman, going over a little bit more turkey hunting content. Check out the YouTube channel, and we will catch y'all back here on the next episode of the Southern Outdoorsman podcast.
All right, guys, we're starting to get kind of close to summer here, and you know what my favorite part about summer is? The Mobile Hunters Expo. Y'all heard us talk about it a lot last year, and we actually got to meet a lot of you guys at that expo. Well, we're excited to announce we're going to be there again. This time, it's going to be in Dalton, Georgia, June 28th through June 30th. We are going to be there all 3 days. We're going to have a bunch of past podcast guests there. We're going to have a booth where you can come by and grab some merchandise, and I'm sure we're going to be recording all kinds of podcasts there. If you're unfamiliar, the Mobile Hunters Expo is the place you need to be. If you are the kind of hunter that listens to this podcast, this show was literally made for you. It is an excellent group of people that are going to be there. A lot of whitetail killers from around the Southeast are going to be there. You're going to get to talk to them, shake their hand, learn from them in person, make some connections. And guys, we get a lot of questions about Hey, which saddle should I get? Which tree stand should I get? What about this piece of gear? What about that piece of gear? How do I meet other hunters who want to hunt the same way that I do? You know, finding a good hunting buddy. The Mobile Hunters Expo is a place for all of that. So you guys, don't miss it. June 28th through the 30th, Dalton, Georgia. We'll see you there.